7-day intensive seminar, lecture 2, completely give in to the program. This is the technique. Completely give in to the program. As we said, powerful attention is required from each of the participants, and it is, and they're, those of you who are here at this seminar are ready to completely give in to the program. Now, what does it mean to give in to the program? What does it mean to do that? Too often, we think that it means just acquiesce without knowing what you're doing. Now, we don't want to just do that. None of us are acquiescers. None of us are people that other people can push around or encourage. If somebody says we're terrible, we right away get on the stick and say, why, how, where, what's going on? We just won't take it. We're not the kind of milquetoast that will say, well, if you said it, then it must be right that I'm terrible and I'm bad. Okay? Now, to completely give in to the program means the program of what? A principle. The program of principle. Now, in mathematics and music are the two most elegant ways of thinking in the entire universe. The universe is glued together, if you will, by mathematics and by music, because it is music that works with mathematical precision. It is mathematics that works with a principle of precision, and you don't understand what it is. You can't understand what it is, because you're not the ones who gave it its definition. You're not the great list of mathematicians that have come down through the millennia, and these people have come up with some rather fantastic ways of looking at things, and they have whirled mathematics around from geometry and spherical trigonometry and calculus and all of these other things, plus the basics of mathematics, addition, subtraction, multiplication, division, and what?
Music.
Hmm?
Music.
And music. No, we have this foundation, and this foundation is what we want to learn. You cannot begin to know mathematics. Mathematics is such a vast, marvelous field that people will study that for a million years and not understand it. Music, people will study that for a million years and not understand it. Because there are all the various tones and all the various scales and all the various notes and all the various details of it. It's very complex, but very beautiful. And when it is properly done, and very unbeautiful when it's not properly done. But we're dealing with a principle in all these things. Now, what is the principle? Now, this is the part that gets to most of us when we get to the principle, because we like to think the principle is something. Well, the principle is nothing. The principle is nothing. What is the principle of Heinz getting up and sitting down? What's the benefit of it? What's the purpose of it? What's the reason of it? He may get up because he wants to get up, and he may sit down because he wants to sit down. He may get up because the seat is hot, or he may sit down because the seat is cool. He may have all sorts of reasons, but that's not the principle. What is the principle based upon? The principle is based upon your choice. What you choose to do, what you want to do. This is the universal principle that guides everything in the universe, everything in life. What we choose to do. Now you say, well, it's got to be more than that. It can't just be a matter of our individual choice. Well, it is. It's just a matter of our individual choice. So, Ellen, no, we won't use Ellen. Where's our guy? Here, take this head here. Here we have this fellow. Nice looking head, isn't it? Here we got this fellow, and this fellow has just come down with a brain tumor. A brain tumor. There's a tumor up in his brain here. And it's messing his thinking up, messing his head up. And so he doesn't like that tumor. And so he says, I will not give any attention to the tumor. Because I only give attention to things I want, and things I don't want, I don't give attention to. I will not give any attention to the tumor. Okay, now, the tumor is there, quite real. Doctors have seen it, other people have seen it. It's quite evident that it's there. Now, how is this guy going to work with that? How is he going to have the principal go to work on the tumor that he's experiencing? How is he going to have the principal, a matter of choice, remember now, how is he going to have the principal work on that tumor? Now we said, if he gives no attention to it, it should go away. If he gives attention to it, it will stay. And if he gives a lot of attention to it, it'll grow bigger. Now, how can he give no attention to something that is right there? Something that others can see, something that the doctors can see, something that he knows is there. How can he give no attention to it? Now, we've given you the illustration of the little boy who comes running in the house and he says, Mommy, Mommy, and he falls flat on his face. And he scratches his knee and he is crying. And his mommy said, What were you coming in to tell me? I wanted to... And right away he forgets. He forgets the flat on his face. He forgets the scratch. He forgets the hurt. He remembers what he wanted to tell his mother, which was far more important than any little old scratch, any little old bang on the face or something. No, that's just a simple little illustration. I mean, and you're all acquainted with it. You've all seen it happen sometime, someplace, somewhere in your life. And if you haven't, that's good too. Okay, so that is principle. Now, you say, that doesn't sound very grand or very noble. It doesn't sound very exciting for principle. Well, sometimes the most exciting, most beneficial things in life are not necessarily things that sound so grand and noble. You know? All right, Rochelle. Who is the most significant person on the king's cabinet? The minister? Who does the king have on his cabinet?
Advisors,
and what else does he have?
Corchester.
Huh?
Corchester.
Oh, shut up. That comes later. Who is the most important person on the king's cabinet?
The king.
The court jester. The court jester. I know that you got ahead of me there. I wanted to name a few other things, you know. But not the king, but the court jester. Because the court jester, he makes light of everything, and he will take what might have turned into a war and made it into something silly. He'll say, the king's mad at the court, the king's mad at the other king because the other king's got more kings than he has and stuff like that. Da, 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 da. You know, nonsense, stupid, you know, clownish stuff. And then the king says, da, you know, he loses his enthusiasm for being angry. He loses his enthusiasm for being having a war. I mean, for having a war. He loses his enthusiasm. And instead of that, he says, let's party. That's always a good solution, isn't it? Let's party. Now, was there a possibility that there could have been a war, a terrible, terrible, terrible war, and the king might have even lost? Yeah. But the court jester spoke to the king. He could have had his neck chopped off. I imagine a lot of court jesters have lost their heads, you know, because they were able to come out and say things that no one else could, but they still lost their head. But by and large, I would imagine the court jester is pretty secure, because he knows just how far to take it to get the king to think it's silly. Now, was that a real war, aborning? Was that a real conflict that was coming up? Was that something really tension? Was that something that maybe some ministers wanted and some ministers didn't, you know, depending upon which ministers they were, the ministers of war and the ministers of peace, you know, and who wanted which? Well, now, what was happening? That was very real. That was very real. And what happened? No war. The little boy fell down and his attention was diverted to something he really wanted to divert it to, and he forgot about it. This has happened. You've heard of remission, haven't you? Remission is when something fades back into itself and ceases to be. The cancer was in remission. It went back. It went away. It wasn't cured. It wasn't anything. It was just, it wasn't there anymore. That doesn't mean the cause of the cancer wasn't there anymore. The cause of the cancer is not an illness, is not a lack of the enzymes in the body, it's not a lack of the immunity system. The cause of cancer is some emotional trauma in the life of the individual experiencing it. Now, they don't want to say that. Medical science doesn't want to say that because they don't want to begin to research, because then the psychiatrist has to go to work and figure it out. And the psychiatrist will never figure it out, because nobody is willing to talk about the thing that made them so unhappy. Do you know, my wife just drives me up the wall, and I can't tell anybody about it. I cannot tell anybody about it because they will think I'm silly. They'll think I'm so stupid. So then he gets cancer, you know? And so they investigate, and they talk to him, they do this. But do you think he ever tells you what his wife does that drives him up the wall? You know what his wife does that drives him up the wall? She cuts her toenails in bed. And he has to sometimes lay on those little slivers, and that drives him right out the wall. And you see, that's what it is. Now, if he told the doctor or the psychiatrist or anybody that his wife cutting her toenails in bed is driving him bazonk, you know, they would say, man, you are a weak kitten, you know? You have no, you're easily moved, you're easily destroyed. And yeah, that's true, I am easily destroyed. My wife can do 1,000 other things. She can spend all her money, she can burn the house down, she can do this, but it wouldn't touch me one teensy-weensy little bit of her cutting her toenails in bed. And I told her, please don't do that. And she persists in doing that. And you know, one night, you know what I caught her doing? She was biting her toenails off, because I didn't let her have a scissors next to the bed, so she bit them off. She had to bite her toenails, she had to trim her toenails, and so she bit them. Now, you know, it just storks me out, you know. Now, who could you tell that to? Who would know that? Yeah, blah, 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 that's about it, you know. Who could you tell it to? Nobody. Now, and who would believe you? Oh, come on now. You mean a little thing like that disturbs you? A little thing like that shakes you up? You tell you the truth, yeah. The big stuff? No. That she's got two other lovers on the side and that she's got this and that. And that. Yeah, it doesn't bother me at all, you know. She's a wonderful lady, but the thing is, but cutting her toenails in bed. Oh, come on now. You know, let it be something worthwhile. Well, you see, we fight it. We feel it's so it's so unimportant, you know. And it's inconceivable that anybody could be disturbed by that. But we are disturbed by many things. Now, You have a technique of curing your problems, of curing the confusion in your life, by going out to a psychiatrist or a counselor or somebody and helping them dig for the problem. Now, you pull up in front of the doctor's office and the car won't go. And you say to the doctor, I have to get a hotel in town tonight, my car won't run, you know. And the doctor says, well, did you have your car looked at? No, it's probably something terrible, you know. It's probably something very costly, very expensive. And would you like me to look at it? Well, you're a psychiatrist. You're not supposed to be looking at cars. Well, I have a car too, you know. But no. Well, it turns out, what happens? It ran out of gas. That's exactly right. It ran out. I always keep it full of gas. But I didn't know my wife was using the car also during the week, and she never fills it. I had it filled. I thought, it always lasts me until Saturday, you know. And here it's only Wednesday. And my wife's been driving this thing around, taking the kids to all the ball games and different stuff like that, and I didn't realize it. And, you know, these are the stupid things. Now, I'm pointing these things out to you because I want you to realize that's not the solution to any problem. The solution to any problem is to put a new cause in motion, to put another cause in motion, just to put a cause in motion. Now, what is the cause? You say to yourself, my car always runs perfectly. I am an astute driver. I can read the gas gauge in my car and tell when it needs gas. There is more than one person using the car in our family, not just me and my wife, but our teenage son and our teenage daughter, you know. And if you don't think that puts some interesting stresses on the car, you know. And you can't just say, look, I never have trouble with the car. Yeah, but you never had all these young drivers and these old drivers, your wife too, you know. And they go places and do things you wouldn't believe. Did you know that your son was chasing his girlfriend and his girlfriend was out bird watching or bird something or other, and she was chasing the birds with her camera? And he was chasing her down this ruddy, dirty road with your car and just being helpful to her and, of course, chasing away the birds at the same time. And he took your car in a place that no car should go. And then when he tried to get back, he spun the wheels and shook up the whole rear end of the car and the whole front end of the car. And then what did he do? He did as every good child does. They take their credit card and go to the car wash and have it cleaned up with the finish job. They give it the total car wash job. Wax.
Detail.
They give your car the total detail. And so then he takes the car home and his dad says, well, I can't understand why all these things are wrong. It's just in perfect condition, as the paint job goes. But he doesn't know that the car had that exercise. Now, you see, we have our bodies like that. We don't know what sort of emotional upsets we have. We don't know what sort of a trauma we're going through. We have no idea. And there's no way we could even begin to know. Could this father ever have guessed that the son did something not naughty, but he was just being with his girlfriend, you know, and she was chasing the birds and he was chasing with her, you know, and then he got stuck in the ditch. And so he tried to get the car out of the ditch by spinning the wheels. That didn't work, so he had to have a tow truck come in, put it on the credit card, and pull the car out. And then he got the car out, and it was such a mess, he had to take it in and have it detailed. And so he brings it home. And anything interesting happened today, son? Oh, I was just with my girlfriend. She was, you know, chasing birds. Oh, that's interesting, you know. But the real adventure never came out. Now, the principle is, you can't know what's wrong with the car. You can't read the gas gauge. Because, I mean, you just would never see it. You would overlook the most obvious thing in the world. Like you say, Ellen, where did you leave your pen? And Ellen says, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. And Ellen will take a guess. Well, I don't know. And so she looks and looks and looks, and she searches the whole house and kind of, and it's sitting right next to her seat, right where she's sitting there, you know. But she didn't even think of looking in the most obvious place. So what I'm saying by all this stuff is, in our researching, we want to go into such detail. We want to look into such detail. And we want to find such detail, and we never can find the solution. Now, what did the father want who had the car? What did he want? Ingeborg, what did he want?
Drive it.
Yeah. He wanted the car to run.
Yeah.
He wanted to drive it. He wanted the car to run. Okay, you're right. So he wanted the car to run. So now, what does the father always do? Sylvia, what does the father always do about his car? I surround my car with my pure white light of love. All my ways are peace and all my paths are pleasantness, and the way is always open before me. My goodness sakes alive! How quickly we forget. We said it just this morning, you know. I surround my car with my pure white light of love. All its ways are peace and all its paths are pleasantness. And what's going to happen to that car?
Never get stuck in the mud.
What's going to happen to that car is that it will never be misused. And this is what's going to happen to that car too. It will never have been misused. Can we work on the past as well as the present as well as the future? Can we work on the universal now? You see, when we work with principle, I surround this car with my pure white light of love. When we work with principle, we are working with the universal principle that knows no time and no space. That universal principle. And so, this guy, he's got the brain tumor. I'm glad I got him here. He's got this brain. You don't have a brain tumor. But anyhow, he's got this brain tumor. And so, he says, I'm whole and perfect, I'm whole and perfect, I'm fantastic, I'm wonderful, life is great, everything's beautiful, everything's fantastic. Da, let's go dancing, let's do this here. Da, 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 let's do this, this, this. And then he forgets about the tumor. He forgets about the tumor. He forgets about the tumor until it is no longer in his consciousness, even in the teensy-weensiest little bit. He forgets about it absolutely. And then, what kind of a healing does he experience, Ellen?
Spiritual healing.
And what is a spiritual healing, Ellen?
It has never been, and it never shows up in any records. And
no, no.
Nobody.
It has never been, therefore it is on no doctor's records nor anything else like that. Not that it shows up. I mean, it was never there in the first place. But how can it be? Just by changing his thought, he changes his experience. And that's true. Just by changing his thought, he changes his experience. Now, why do we know people who have beautiful healings and we don't know about them because they were spiritual healings? And why is it that we have problems now and then? Why is it that our life has a conflict? Why do we have a tumor in our brain? Why do we have cancer? Why do we have rheumatism or arthritis or anything else you want to name it? I hate naming things anyhow. Why do we have any of these things? Because we give them attention. Now, can you give attention to wholeness? No. Gregor has been complaining that he hasn't had the job that pleases him for a long time. And he says, I don't have a job that pleases me. 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 Have you heard that? You heard that? Once or twice maybe, you know? Gregor You never can have a job that's going to please you as long as you say, I don't have a job that pleases me. Now, Gregor, that's fine. Gregor, I want you to forget there was ever a time in your life that you didn't have a job that pleased you. Right now and always, you have a job that pleases you and pays well and delights you and encourages you to use your talents to the highest and best. You are just having loads of fun. And Gregor Mueller, you, I hope you don't mind, you work during your work time and you come home and you leave your work at the office. You do not bring your work at home. You don't have to. You've got your work done during your office time. You got your work done while you're at work. You understand? You don't have to take your work at home. You don't have to do these things. And so a lot of people, they do, you know. Now, why is the richest man in the world the richest man in the world? Because he doesn't work. He plays. Everything he does is a joy to him. It's play to him. And if he doesn't like it, then he sells it. Or he buys something new or whatever. But he does everything as a joy. Now, do you think that his family, perhaps, is much like the Kennedy family? Do you think that when he comes home from work, he talks about his first love, not his wife or his kids, but his money-making projects. And it's not work. That's not work, that's pleasure, that's play. Now, when you have whatever you do be pleasure or play, you will be a professional at it, par excellent. You will be marvelous. But as long as you come home and you have work to do, as long as you say, I wish I had my perfect job, I'd like to have my perfect job, when you start saying to yourself, I have my perfect job, and I am the happiest guy in the world, I have my perfect job, you too. You know, no matter what job you got, you can always be more perfect. You know? I have my perfect job. So you open yourself up to it. I had one woman who was a student, and I think she's still a student. She's cooking around her late 80s, and you may have heard about her. She was the secretary for Howard Hughes, and Howard Hughes is Mr. Money back then, as well as his organization still is worth a great deal of money, you know. Many billions of dollars. Well, she was his personal secretary. And I wanted to meet Edgar Mitchell, and she asked me, not knowing I wanted to meet him, but because I wanted to meet him, I created her calling me. She knew he had Edgar Mitchell, and she asked me if I'd call Edgar Mitchell because he had some problems, and he wanted some help on the problems. So I called Edgar Mitchell, and I gave him the help that he needed, and so he said, what can I do for you, Herb, you know, already? And I said, well, the United Church would like you to come up here and talk with them about their healing projects. Okay, when do you want me? I said, this weekend. He said, fine. He says, I'll bring my, I think he had a girlfriend at that time, yeah, because I was going to marry them. He brought his girlfriend up and her two kids and his entourage. He had about four or five other people. He has the Noetic Sciences Organization. And so she came. And rather, she didn't come. He came. And so I had never met him. And so he was supposed to meet with the bigwigs of our company, the United Church. And I had my little office about the size of Ellen's back room back there, you know. And so I was sitting in my office, and he came in. And he says, they're not ready for me yet. And I said, what do you mean? He says, they're having a meeting, and they can't meet with me yet. And I said, cool, you know. And I said, sit down here. So for 6 hours, he and I talked. not about philosophy, not about everything under the sun. And we became very close, very dear friends, and I worked with him as he can. And then I performed his wedding later. And so, but what I'm trying to say is, my company wanted to have Edgar Mitchell come to some meetings. He did not answer our telephone calls. He did not answer our letters. He did not answer any. And I said, he'll come. I didn't know. He'll come, you know. And so then this woman called me because I had known her. And she says, Herb, I have a man that I know you're not happy about right now. And I'd like you to counsel with him. I was not happy about everybody. He was in Texas. And so I called him and counseled with him. And zip, 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 everything fell right into place. You follow me? Now, it really was no big jelly on my bread to have him. It was nice. And he was a pleasant guy. I, since after that, went many places with him. But it was he was his thing and I was mine. And but I wanted him. I wanted to get a hold of him. I wanted to have contact with him. And so I put the cause in motion. Edgar Mitchell's coming. No problem. Edgar Mitchell's coming. And then the telephone calls that I could never have guessed would happen. I could never have guessed that they would call me and that she would call. What's her name? I married she and her husband here on camp, over at Neil Meditations. And it was a naked wedding, too. And she married some retired Navy person. And they're a nice couple. They're now over in Louisiana or someplace. And but the thing is, you see, you put causes in motion and zoom, 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 zoom. These things just all work out perfectly. Now, are you ready for that? Are you ready for that? Are you ready to be so blasé, so devil may care about anything that you just put the cause in motion and let it happen? Are you ready to have a spiritual healing in your life? And a spiritual healing is one where nobody knows that you ever were ill. If you have any scars on your body, they heal up. They're not there anymore. Nobody knows about it. If you have any problems, nobody knows about it. Maybe you even died. Nobody knows about it. But you see, when you realize you're working with a principle that has no name, a principle that has no understanding to it, no way to give it any power, no way to give it any understanding. You're dealing with something that is putting something to work that you don't know anything about. Now, when you do that, you're saying, like, for instance, I'm whole and perfect. I like me. I'm divine order. I'm peace. All is in divine order. My body is the temple of the living spirit, like our affirmations tell us, and we'll be doing more with them. Think about that. Think about that. Are you doing something specific? Are you doing something specific for that tumor in the brain or for that hangnail or anything else? Are you doing something definite? No. You are cleaning house. You are cleaning house. You are preparing yourself for your wholeness. You are completely forgetting. Boing! You got amnesia, you know. You no longer remember anything about your illness or the problem that you had or the lack that was in your world. And now you just go forward without that being there any longer. I wonder. I think it'd be kind of a neat experiment. If we could have, say, let's take a dozen guys and girls with brain tumors. Yeah. And they all come to us and they got these brain tumors. And so we say, okay, stand here. And then we take a sledgehammer and hit each one on the head. You know, and knock them cuckoo. And then they don't remember who they were. They don't remember anything. Now, how many of them would still have a brain tumor? None. Because they don't remember that they had it. They don't remember. And do you think they'll be aware of something going on in their brain? No. They might just have a headache, and then it goes away. But what is remission? Remission is where the body reabsorbs the tissues that are not doing the proper thing. You understand? That's remission. What are you up to, Ellen?
I turned off the air condition.
That's always a good idea. But the thing is, remission. What is remission? Ellen remitted the air conditioner. She felt that just because the sun had gone down for a minute that it was cool in here, so she would turn off the air conditioner. Now, it's wonderful, isn't it? Isn't it wonderful?
Mm-hmm.
Now, did you know the air conditioner was on? Did you know the air conditioner was on? Did you care? And Ellen?
Yes.
I cannot make this happen, but I can say to you, be so excited in this seminar this week, because this is just opening doors now in the beginning. Be so excited with this thing here, because by the time we're done, I'm going to give control to a new group. And if you're ready, you can be in that group. And this new group is not going to have any remembrances of anything else in the world except whatever it is that is our original purity and integrity. It won't have any remembrances whatsoever. It'll like be having amnesia. Did you ever meet a person with amnesia? And real amnesia, where they didn't remember anything of their family, they didn't remember anything of their job or their work. They were nice. They could dress themselves. They could go to the toilet and they could do eat and things like that. But and they had a certain proclivity toward a certain interest in mechanics or in business or what have you. But they didn't remember anything. And they were no benefit wherever they had been. Now, have you ever met anybody like that? Were they strange people? No. Were they sort of pure people? They were people without a bunch of preset ideas in them about what is right and wrong and what is good and bad. It's very interesting. No. How would you work yourself out in such a situation? How would you work yourself out in such a situation? Are you ready to do some very powerful work on yourself to enjoy that amnesia? Can you take your mind away from falling down and hurting yourself to tell a story? The kid comes in the house. He's got something in his hand. He says, "Mommy, I got something for you." And sister comes out the door, slam right into his face, and just knocks him off his legs. And he's laying on the floor crying and screaming and shouting. And the mother, who really is a very nice person, but she said, "Francois," that's the boy's name, "Francois, you had something to tell me. Please come here and tell me. I'm waiting." "Francois, what is it you have to tell me?" And he's just bawling his head off. And she says, "Francois, wasn't it important what you had to tell me?" And he cries lesser and lesser. Finally he comes in. "He says, Mama, I had something for you." "Well, Francois, you still have it now. And it's still just as beautiful as whenever. But what is it you have for me?" So he opens his hand, and there is this battered flowers that he grabbed in the garden as he's coming in, and they're all crunched in his hand. And she looks at him and said, "Francois, that is the most beautiful bouquet of flowers I ever got in my life. Your father gave me a bouquet of flowers once that looked pretty close to that, but nothing as beautiful as this." And what do you think Francois is doing? "Okay, Mom, see you later." Well, he's out and forgetting all about it. and even passes his sister on the way out, and he says, "Hi, sis." And, you know, not one remembrance of being slammed in the face of the door. Now you say, "Herb, can you ever think of some illustration without kids?" Sure, we'll have them later. But the thing is, think about this. Think about this. There's an article that said that a dog's memory span was a matter of seconds, and they had to keep renewing it. And then it said that little children's memory span was a matter of seconds, and you had to keep renewing it. And that's true. That's true. The memory span is a matter of seconds. But what's going on inside takes much, much more. A child might be working on something, and he might get distracted, and then he'll come work on it, and he'd be distracted. But when a child is creating, not working on something that is an is, but is creating, when that child is creating brand new, his memory span is infinite. When a dog is creating brand new constantly, his memory span is infinite. When a dog is chasing a bird, he's got the bird in sight, he's got the bird in mind, he's chasing the bird. The only thing that'll keep a dog from chasing a bird is if the bird disappears. You know? If that which is continuing his creative spirit ceases to be there. Like when Rex is chasing a rabbit, he'll look at the rabbit, and the rabbit will look back at him, and then the rabbit will dash off in the bush to the right, and Rex will say, okay. If the rabbit starts going down the road, Rex says, this looks like fun, you know? And then if the rabbit jumps off the road and jumps into the bushes, Rex will jump in there too and say, "I don't see you," you know? And it's okay. Completely ignoring chasing the rabbit. Completely. And he'll start sniffing something else. But a complete change, that's a beautiful type of change like we were speaking about. An amnesia type of forgetfulness. That's beautiful. Now, we want to train ourselves that the things that we say are really important. And when we say, "I can't do something," that's really important. We are empowering ourselves with the lack of ability to do it. Certainly the lack of interest. And when we say, "I can't do something," we're saying to ourselves, "We can't do it." And it's silly. Now, what do you want to do? What do you want in your life? What's the most important thing in your life? And each one of you has come here with one thing that is the most important thing in your life. I know it, you know it, and that's all that's necessary. But now, are you going to mention whatever it is that's the most important thing in your life? Or are you going to mention to yourself what is your choice for yourself? And you see, I don't know who was... Irene. Irene said to me yesterday, she said, "And you know, I'd like to have lots of money so I could do it. Not too much money, you know, but just lots of money so I could do it. Not too much money, but lots of money so I could do it. Not too much money, just lots of money so I could do what I want. Not too much money, though. Not too much money, because I couldn't handle too much money. If I had too much money, I wouldn't respect myself. I would think that I'm unworthy of having all that money. If I had all Bill Gates' money, I would feel unworthy. If I had Mr. Carlos Slims, or Sims, or whatever his name is, money, I would feel totally unworthy." I'm not going to ask you to answer this, but I'm going to ask you the question. Why in the hell would you feel unworthy if you were the richest girl in the world? You couldn't. You couldn't. Now, what you might do is you might like to have nobody know you're the richest girl in the world so that you can go around and do the things you want to do. And just, you're a rich old girl, that's all, you know. But that you're the richest one in the world, you don't want people to know that. Because then people are begging for money all the time. Now, what you want to do is live opulent. Live opulent. People say, Hey, love, you're rich. Yeah, I got a rich father. Okay, see, then it's somebody else. Then nobody's going to ask you for money. But, okay, so now you say, I am the richest lady in the world. And then people say, hey, can you help a poor soul like me? And you say, right you are. Here's my card. You go and talk to my advisor and they'll take care of you. And so they take the card and they go see your advisor. And your advisor is a counselor advisor. They must agree to sit through a day-long counseling session with the advisor, during which time they'll learn to put causes in motion and do all these good things, you know, and be beautiful beings. And wouldn't it be something? Wouldn't it be something? Isn't that a more lovely gift than money? Because then they can be their own rich person. But that's not what people do. Bill Gates, he goes out with his wife Melinda and they go looking at hospitals that need to be replaced and stuff. And he says, put in a new hospital here. Here's a check. You know, he doesn't say, I'll take it before the committee and see if we agree to this and how much we should spend. Put it in. Tell me what it is, what it costs. You know, don't be wasteful, but get everything you need. And so they do. And they come back to him and the bill is $800,000. And Bill says, how come the bill was $2 million for this previous firm? Well, because by the time we would get the money, there would only be about $800,000 left. Because everybody would get their hand in for it, you know. And so, you see, you have to know your business. And do you want to do that? I would say no. I would say, I don't want to be a Bill Gates. I don't want to be, I don't want to be people giving out money to other people. I want to just live my life so beautifully. I know I'm the richest man in the world. I know I can do all the things I want to do. I know I can have my boat if I want it. But I don't need to own it. I use it once a month or once a year. Why own it? So I could afford it, own it. That's not the point. But why own it? Then it's something on my mind. And I say to my valet, or my wife, or whoever, my kid, I say, hey, I feel like taking a trip around the world. You want to go by boat or by plane or how you want to go? Oh, let's go by boat. Well, you got any boat in mind? Yeah, I'd like to go in that nice 600-foot boat that we went in last time, you know. Okay, fine. Check into the details and get it ready for the day before Christmas and we'll take a trip around the world. Hey, that's cool, you know. And no sweat. No worry what condition the boat's in. No worry how to handle it. When you want it, it's there. And you rent it. Obviously, you're going to be a rich man when you rent that, because a rich man it would take to rent that. And so they're going to charge through the nose. But so what? So what? Buy, rent a cruise ship, you know, if you want to. But who needs all those bedrooms, you know? You just rent something that's designed for opulent expression and enjoy it. And when you're done with it, and there's no rush, or you're keeping it overtime. And so there's no problem. You know, what's the difference to make? And then you want a castle in every country you go to? No. I don't need to have a castle in Spain and Rome and here and there. Whenever I go someplace, I want the deluxe apartment or house or mansion or whatever is there. And I don't care who owns it. You go to that person and you tell them, I want to rent it for a week, a month, a year, or whatever, you know. And they'll rent it. They'll rent it because they're in it for the money. I'm in it for the pleasure. And so I would go down to the Persian Gulf, you know. I'd go down to the Arabic Gulf down there and, you know, get the top floor of that rotating apartment house and enjoy that. Or you know, well, I would be free. Can you imagine saying, oh my God, I have a house in Rome and da 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 da. I have 75 houses around the world, and really, when would I have time to look at any of them or enjoy any of them? And I got to have them on my mind that they're mine. A rich person has no possessions. A rich person has everything but no possessions. When a rich person wants to go in his Mercedes, what does he do? He gets a brand new one at the Mercedes dealer and uses it and then turns it back in when he's done. All right? When a rich person wants a Rolls Royce, or he wants something that is all jazzed up, a Maserati or whatever, he gets it and has it. Now, Reverend Ike, he's a black minister and a very successful minister in the East Coast, and he would travel throughout the United States and the world. And everywhere he went, he had a Rolls Royce waiting for him there. A big four-door, he said, a Rolls Royce. And he'd get in there, and it was his car. He'd have them shipped all over the country so that he could use them when he was anywhere. And he would drive here and drive there, and he just had a ball. But then, he owned a church. And he ran the church. And he used the church the way he wanted to use it. But the government and some of the people in the church didn't like the way he was using it. So they got after him and made trouble for him. And I had at one time told Reverend Ike, I had only met him twice, but I at one time told him, I said, Reverend Ike, don't be like Bob in San Diego here. He put people on his boards of directors. And as soon as he put the people on the board of directors, they fired him. And you, if you're going to let all these people tell you how to run your organization, you won't have an organization very long. And he didn't. But the problem was, he made them all important on his board of directors and on this and on that and on the other thing. And when it came down to it, and he wanted to do the things he wanted to do, which were not bad, but they were different, flamboyant, they got after him and they fired him. A guy here in Los Angeles, he had this big ministry, big. He had 24 colleges in his university here. And his Truth magazine that he published every month. Big operation. And he was just a really great guy. And he had his kids working in there and everybody else. And it was a very successful program. But he did the same thing. And I had advised him many times, don't get all these people involved in there. They're gonna short circuit you. But he did. And when he did, then they put him in prison. And naturally, they let him out shortly because there was nothing to it. But they all tried to say that he was misusing the church's funds. And there was all his stuff. It was all his world. It's all his program. But he let these other people come in and try to run it. Be yourself. You cannot afford to let other people come into your life. You cannot afford to let other people come into your heart, into your world, into your beingness. You got to be yourself and have fun. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't have a lover, you don't have friends, you don't have people that are close to you, but you don't tell them everything. If you told your dad, for instance, you went up to your dad and you said, Dad, I'm independently wealthy. I am a fabulous woman. I am just, and I am that. Your father would say, oh, don't I wish, you know. I'd like that for you, daughter. I'd like that for you. You know, it'd be nice. But, you know, he wants good stuff for you, doesn't he? But he cannot believe that you have it and haven't shown it up to this moment, you know? He cannot believe that you got it because he's too much of a pragmatist. He's too much of a fundamentalist. He's got to see it to believe it. And Irene comes home. And she goes to her sister and says, Jacqueline, isn't it?
Jeanette.
She goes to, Jacqueline wouldn't do it. But she goes to Jeanette and says, Jeanette, what you doing? Oh, no. Come on, let me take you out to dinner. All right. Jeanette, I don't dress. Just wear what you got. We're going to stop by the fashion shop. We're going to pick up a few things for you because I'd like to buy a couple things for you. And so she takes Jeanette to the fashion shop and buys her a beautiful fur stole and silk dresses and, you know, all sorts of razzmatazz stuff, you know. And Jeanette says, "Ah, what is all this about? Did you strike it rich or something?" "No, no, no, no." And then Jeanette, "I'm off to see my friends on campus, and I'm leaving tomorrow morning. I don't need my Maserati anymore. You want it?" And she says, "Sure. Well, here, I'll sign it over for you." "You're not planning on dying or anything, are you?" "No, no, 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 no." And so then next time she comes back to Jeanette, she says, "Jeanette, I want to take you out to dinner." And Jeanette says, "Like last time?" And she says, "No, not like last time." She says, "I want you to come to dinner at my home. I have the penthouse apartment at the downtown Ritz in Zurich, and I want you to come down and have dinner with me there," and so forth. And so Jeanette comes down and has dinner with Irene in her beautiful, she's all done up in the latest, the styles and everything, you know. And is Jeanette married?
Yes.
Yes? That's okay. I thought maybe she wasn't. We'd have gentlemen laying all over the room. And that's okay. Both. But you see, and then Irene says, "Now, Jeanette, the reason I haven't invited you over before was because I've just been so busy, but I wanted to see you again before I'm leaving." "Well, where are you going now?" "Well, I have just had an invitation from the president of the Chinese government to come over and counsel with them on positive thinking. And so I won't be needing my house here, and by the time I need it again, I'll probably want a different one. So I'll give it to you. It's all paid for. It's a fully self-owned apartment. You know, it's all yours." And Jeanette say, "Wow. And I never really was very nice to you all these years that we've been sisters. I've always just taken you for granted." And Irene says, "I never take anyone for granted, and I love everyone. And no one has to love me back for me to love them." And so you see what I'm saying? You don't know what silly stories I'm going to tell. You don't know what crazy things I'm going to talk about. And you don't know how absolutely true they are. And if you want, you can have these miracles take place in your life. But if you don't want them, they're not there. And if you want to pretend that the things that I'm talking about are a lot of poppycock, a lot of nonsense, then that's what they are. If you want to realize that the things that I'm talking about all have validity, all have reality, all have something going for them, that as we continue with our talks together, we're going to be talking more about how you can clean up your mind of your old thinking that said, if you can't touch it, it ain't so, into how it can be so. Now, you may laugh about Irene and her, not her mother so much, but her sister and the experiences. And if Irene would open her eyes, she would see this is just what she's done already. Interesting, huh? Okay, my loves, until we come back after lunch, we have physical release of the outer material world and its signals, emotional releases of all sensitive desires for food, drink, breathing, and awareness, brain mental release of all thoughts about family, friends, business, dreams, desires, and goals, spiritual purposelessness, let go, and let the divine within reveal its path and purpose to us. Did we cover all those things?
Yes.
We really did. And surprisingly as it may seem to you, we really did. So we're going to have lecture 3 this afternoon, and we're going to say, build a bond with the divine within. Tune into the divine path within through introspection in the 3-hour meditation. Recognize that the divine indwelling is our playful self and take life lightly. Techniques: talk, think, and walk, and be with the center of my being. Let go of the mystery of the inner presence and be one as its awareness. And then we'll have our workshop and our music shop. So be ready for a fun afternoon with all sorts of interesting things. I love you.